Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, Nikki Giovanni, poet, activist, and author. We bring you a brand new talk by Nikki Giovanni. It is the speech she gave at the 10th Annual Pan-African Studies Forum at Cal State University, Los Angeles, held on May 10th, 2017. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. Republicans are celebrating after Karen Handel won the nation's most expensive congressional race ever. Handel thanked Republican leaders, including President Trump, after she won the election with 52% of the vote.
And a special thanks to the President of the United States of America.
Handel's victory over Democrat John Ossoff in Georgia's 6th congressional district means Republicans held all four of the seats that were up for grabs in special elections this spring. Ossoff said while it wasn't the outcome they had hoped for, the campaign still made gains.
And we showed the world that in places where no one thought it was even possible to fight, we could fight. We showed them that we can still build coalitions of people who may not see eye to eye on everything, but rather than demonizing each other, we find common ground to move forward. And that's the only way this country will move forward.
The tab for the race exceeded $50 million. The U.S. military says it shot down an Iranian-made armed drone in southern Syria. It marked the third time this month that the U.S. has downed aircraft affiliated with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's government. The U.S.-led coalition fighting the self-styled Islamic State group said a U.S. F-15 fighter jet shot down the drone after it displayed hostile intent while approaching a military camp near the Syria-Jordan border. U.S.-led forces shot down another drone in the same location 2 weeks ago. The repeated incidents have taken place in the vicinity of a camp where U.S. forces are training local ground forces in the fight against the Islamic State. They add to soaring regional tensions that could spiral out of control just as the fight against IS enters a crucial phase. U.S.-backed forces are pushing into the group's de facto capital, the Syrian city of Raqqa. Muslim leaders are questioning Virginia detectives' insistence that the beating death of a teenage Muslim girl appears to have been a case of road rage. They say the attack looks like a hate crime. 17-year-old Nabra Hassanin was bludgeoned with a baseball bat early Sunday by a motorist who drove up to about 15 Muslim teenagers as they walked or bicycled along a road. A Hassanin family spokesperson said all the girls in the group were wearing Muslim headscarves and robes. In a sign of solidarity, Muslim groups held vigils across the country to honor the teen. Meshgan Samadi attended the San Francisco vigil.
There's a lot of speculation of, was it because she's Muslim or not? And ultimately, the reality is she didn't do anything to this individual. And for this individual to beat her in such a terrible way, that's hate in itself. It's scary because growing up and even now, there's days where we will go to an IHOP at night and the idea that someone would do this to me or to someone I know in our community member in our community is it's horrific.
Darwin Martinez Torres, a 22-year-old from El Salvador, suspected of being in the country without authorization, was jailed without bail on a murder charge after the girl's body was pulled from a pond near his apartment. A Muslim attorney who represents undocumented immigrants warned against allowing the teen's death to sow division between the Latino and Muslim communities. A federal judge has approved a settlement in the wrongful death lawsuit filed by the parents of Michael Brown. the unarmed African-American 18-year-old, his fatal shooting by a white police officer nearly 3 years ago in Ferguson, Missouri, set off months of protest. Financial terms of the settlement were not disclosed. The officer who shot Brown resigned from the police force in November of 2014, soon after a St. Louis County grand jury announced he would not be indicted. The U.S. Department of Justice also found no grounds to prosecute Darren Wilson. But the investigation led to a Justice Department lawsuit over racially biased police and court practices. A settlement calls for significant changes in operations, including sensitivity training for officers, adoption of community policing techniques, court reforms, and other measures. Uber's CEO and co-founder Travis Kalanick has resigned. Kalanick said he had accepted a request from investors to step aside. He said the move will allow Uber to go back to building itself rather than becoming distracted by another fight. He'd already been on indefinite leave amid criticism of his management style and following the death of his mother. Uber has been trying to reverse damage done to its reputation by revelations of sexual harassment in its offices, allegations of trade secret theft, and an investigation into efforts to mislead government regulators. I'm Eileen Alfandary. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Today, we focus on Nikki Giovanni, poet, writer, educator. She's been given the keys to over 24 cities. She's won 7 NAACP Image Awards. She's been nominated for a Grammy and has been awarded the Langston Hughes Medal, was named a finalist for the National Book Award. She's written 3 New York Times and Los Angeles Times bestsellers. Nikki Giovanni is taught at Queens College, Rutgers University, and Ohio State. She is now the University Distinguished Professor at Virginia Tech. We want to thank the Pan-African Studies Department of Cal State LA and their department chair, Dr. Melina Abdullah, for inviting me to their annual dinner and forum, which made it possible for us to be able to share with you, the Sojourner Truth audience, the speech Nikki Giovanni gave on May 10th at the Pan-African Studies Forum. She spoke to a packed house, including scholars from the Pan-African Studies Department, others from the Cal State University and surrounding community. Let us go now to hear from Nikki Giovanni.
We here in Los Angeles, I know we at this school have a great relationship with the Black Panthers. Yes. And I know that whatever else you're doing, you have to understand these are great men and women. These are people they were. These are people that made it. Made a big difference, and one of the reasons that I'm upset with that Negro that was the president just before this fool. I just, to be clear where I stand on these things. He was in office, Barack Obama was in office for 8 years. He should have pardoned every Panther, ever. Because she wouldn't have been there if they hadn't done what they did. That's the truth. And I think that we have to keep some of those things in mind because everybody's walking around now because Trump is such a fool that they're saying things like, we miss Barack. I don't think I miss any of them because I think they've all been crazy since. And you and I know that, but you have to vote. And you have to vote for 2 reasons. You have to vote because of an incredible, really a lovely young man named Tupac Shakur. Yeah. Had a sign. I don't look that good. The sign said, Thug Life. And Tupac would stand on the stage like this and say, vote or die. And he was right. That's exactly. And there's another woman, and we are beginning now to give her some of the honor that she deserves, named Fannie Lou Hamer. And I remember Miss Hamer I don't know who you think killed Jack Kennedy, and we're not discussing that, but it ended up Lyndon Johnson was president. I just thought I'd mention it. Miss Hammer organized the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. And she took a bus and she went to Atlantic City. And Lyndon Johnson recognized he had a problem and he didn't want to be bothered with it because he didn't want anybody asking, well, I wonder who killed Jack Kennedy. So he said to her, why don't I give you 2 seats? Will this make you happy? And I will quote Miss Hammer on this one. She said, I didn't come here for no 2 seats. And she got on the bus with her people and they went back, they drove back to Mississippi. Now the problem was going to be, and Miss Hammer knew it as well as I or anybody else, when they crossed the border to Mississippi, they were going to do what they did, which is stop the bus and drag her off and beat her within an inch of her life, which we know that they did. It never changed her mind. And the reason that the Democratic Party got to be what it was to you and me is that Miss Hammer took that beating. And so it's important, no matter what you think, you can write in your dog's name, but you have to go. You have to go to the poll and you have to write in something. We know now that Putin agrees with me. You just go. You know damn well the Russians control the election. I'm amazed that people are still trying to discuss that. What I want to know is what? And some of you will be young enough. I'm 73, I'm going to be gone. I want to know what Donald Trump promised the FBI director to come back and say that he had information on Hillary Clinton. And it wasn't that, because we knew that that. But then Donald Trump turned around and didn't give Comey what he was supposed to. So Comey turned back around and said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to reopen the file on you. And so 24 hours later, he was fired. Am I right? It's fun if you haven't got anything else to do. It's just fun to kind of keep up with that, because you know Trump is a liar, and you know he'll promise anybody anything, and you know he won't do it. My guess is that he promised Comey that he could be on the Supreme Court. That's what I'm guessing. And that he back, well, you know, he wasn't going to do that. And so they're fighting with each other right now about who's going to do what. I know this. We in the black community, we in this room, we are the Pan-African community, we of color have saved this country time and time again. You know, people keep forgetting that. They talk about, oh, the white guys did the Constitution. They wrote the Constitution. They wrote what they wrote because a black woman was in the kitchen saying, you know, Miss John, I think you ought to add in. We know black women. We know that they didn't sit down and think of anything for themselves. They didn't think of any First Amendment for themselves. We were sitting there cooking for them, telling them what they ought to do, what they ought to have. Now, don't forget us. You know. And they didn't do what they should have done, but they put it in language that we could fight for. And we in this community, we of the colored community, have continued to fight for the best in America. Americans have to do something for themselves now. We're tired of it. We have done just about every damn thing that can be done to help these white people be free. I just want to mention, because I'm here in California with you all, and one of the things that you have to do, last night it was really pretty, it's cloudy today, but one of the things you youngsters have to do, and it's not that many young people, the kids who dance about their age, you who are my age and you who are in college right now, you're already too old. But the black community has to think about our relationship to space. And one of the things that keeps happening is that everybody wants you and me to think, oh, if we deal with space, they're against us. The aliens are going to come and they're going to do something to us. There is nothing that anybody anywhere in space can do to us that hasn't been done. That's the truth. There's nothing we can be afraid of, because we were sold. and we were brought across the Atlantic Ocean. So we know what it's like to be from someplace you know, through something you don't quite know, to someplace you don't know at all. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Then when we got out, we have to realize there's no such language as African language. The language is what the Twi, what the various communities speak. Like there's no such thing as the European language. There's Portuguese and German and whatever you got. We have to realize that these people, our ancestors, came to this country which we didn't know. The first English word they probably understood was sold, because they would put on a rock, sold. They probably thought their names were sold. Then they were sent out to a community that they didn't know where that was. And they were being told to do something that they didn't understand what somebody was talking to them about. But what's wonderful about black people is that they went out and they found a way to talk to each other through song. The beginning of They talked to each other through finding a religion. They talked to each other through understanding that they weren't going to be Jesus. They weren't going to be on the cross. But they were going to admire a man named Simon. Because you have to realize, you know, how Pontius Pilate was not only a fool, but a coward. We've got one in the White House. We do. Pontius Pilate had 4 men and 3 crosses. Pontius Pilate knew that Jesus didn't do anything. Didn't he say that? Some of us are Christian in here. The rest of us are something else, but some of us are Christian. Didn't he say, I find no fault with this man? And what he should have done was given them $1, $1/4, whatever they gave in those days, said, buy the beer, and I'm sorry I've disturbed you. But he knew that the Romans wanted Jesus gone because Jesus was starting something that they couldn't control. So he asked the crowd, which is why you have to be careful what you ask a crowd. He says to the crowd, what do you want? Who shall I give you? I've got Barabbas, who is a thief, and I've got this man to whom I find no fault. And the crowd said, give us Trump. Give us Barabbas. So now we got Jesus filling out the cross. And we know that the cross is heavy. I'm always interested to see people wear crosses. You know, they put a little gold cross. I think it's nice. I'm not knocking it. I'm not. But that's not heavy. The one that Jesus had to carry was heavy. And there was a man in the crowd, and he saw that Jesus was struggling. Now he knew he couldn't go up on Calvary and die for him, but he thought, I can help. And his name was Simon. He was a Cyrenian. And we have been bombing Cyrene. We have been calling it Cyrenia, but we have been bombing them ever since. But Simon, the Cyrenian, went up and said, let me help you. He helped Jesus carried that cross. You and I have carried the cross. We have helped, we have lifted it up, and we haven't complained. We have found a way to make some joy, something, some love out of a horrible situation. When Jesus had to take the cross back, he knew that he had to die. So we know that what they're going to do, because they're crazy and mean, they're going to nail him to the cross. His mother was standing there, and she's now watching the blood of her son. She's going to watch them lift him up, and the blood is going to drip down. And his mother was being taken care of John, if we recall correctly, the beloved disciple. And everybody wants to get mad at gay people. Everybody wants to say, oh no, that's a sin. That ain't the sin. The sin is hating somebody who has loved somebody. Mention that. And we know they put the cross up, and now we got Jesus in the middle, we got a fool on the right. Because the fool on the right is going to say to Jesus, because he's mad anyway, he did what they accused him of doing. But he's going to say to Jesus, huh, you say you God, you up here just like me. And what you have to love about Jesus is that he looked at him, he recognized, oh, that's a fool. I don't have time today. Now, some days he did, you know, some days, but today he had something to do. And talking to a fool wasn't one of them. But the man on the left looked over and said to him, to Jesus, I believe that you are God. And Jesus said to the man on the left, today, you will be with me in heaven. You remember that? And sometimes we have to, because we're looking at these fools on the right now. We have to remember that we don't have time for them right now. I'm not preaching my sermon today, but when I was thinking, I just wanted to share that, because when I was coming in here, I was thinking, I don't know the Bible like a lot of people in this audience know the Bible, but it seems like it was Matthew that Jesus was saying he had to go out 40 days and 40 nights into the wilderness.
Yes.
And it seems like Satan went out to tempt him. Satan knew that Jesus was hungry, because 40 days and 40 nights without food and water make you hungry. It will, even Jesus. And so Satan said, and that's what Satan did. We met Matthews, and Satan said, you know, turn these stones into bread. And I love it, because Jesus looked at him and said, get thee behind me, Satan. And there are people here who think the only thing that they have to do in life is find a way to turn stone into bread. It's to find a way to make a little more money, no matter who they have to sell out, no matter who they have to get down on. No, it's a shame. Reverend C.L. Franklin, whom some of you know, you're my age, Reverend C.L. Franklin talks about Satan goes to a prayer meeting. And one of the things he pointed out, and I'm going to quit this, but I just think you ought to hear it today. One of the things he pointed out was that Satan was lazy. We know that. So Satan didn't go to a prayer meeting on his own. He came on somebody. He came with some evil. He came with trying to make somebody greedy. And one of the things you here in Los Angeles have to remember is that every damn thing isn't money, isn't something that somebody is giving you, isn't somebody loving you who hates you. You have to remember to love the people who love you. And I've been amazed that I look at some of our youngsters, not just here in LA, I'm not picking on you. I've been looking at the black youngsters. White people don't like me. Not all of them. Somebody, one white person likes you, damn it. Find that. And the rest of them, remember, you don't like them. They're not going to control your life. You say, well, Nikki, what do you think your generation did? We broke down segregation. That's what we did. We did. We did a good job. You're not growing up. If you got problems, but you're not growing up seeing signs that say colored only, colored waiting room, colored. You don't see that. And what you had hoped was that there would be no racism. But Satan's always with us. There's always going to be some racism. But we gave you a world that you are not segregated in. Now you have to decide what you want to do with that. You have to decide who you want to be. You have to decide what the world is. I mentioned space. Because the one thing we know, that if there is space, and I'm a big space fan, there's no reason that there's no life in Mars. Because the people who are talking about space are the people that don't know life on Earth. That's the truth. And I know if we're going to go into space, we're going to have to send a black woman, because the black woman is the only person that gets along with everybody. We go up into space, so, you know, some alien will rape a black woman. I said, some alien has already raped a black woman. Can't you see? All you have to do is look around. But we know that whatever it is, the black woman will ingest it. It will be hers. She will deliver it. She will name it, and she will love it. So whatever we're doing in space or any place else, we have to ask the black woman, will she lead us? That's the truth. Will she lead us? I worry. I'm not a worrisome person particularly. I just want to mention that, but I worry sometimes. I just worry because I think men, and it's not without, that's no color. I think that men are in danger, of course, of the penis becoming extinct. Well, any organ that you misuse, you lose, right? We don't have our tonsils anymore, you know. And one day men are gonna wake up and they're not gonna have a penis. And that'll be good for everybody because maybe they'll quit misusing it. Maybe they'll quit thinking it's a toy. Maybe they'll find out if you're not taking care of any of yourself, you don't deserve it. Which is gonna put the men in a bad shape because the only people that care about the penis are gay men, and everybody wants to act like something's wrong with gay men. They better be glad that they're gay men. I just thought I'd mention it, so maybe sometimes you realize that you love with your heart. So I write poetry. And it's a good time. It's a good time to be alive. It's a good time to enjoy something. It's a good time to think about what we want to make of this world. I have a son, and my son is 46, so he's old. He really is. But I worry. I shouldn't tease them. I'm not actually teasing them. Y'all are going to lose it if you don't use it better. But I wrote a poem for D'Angelo. I just wanted to share this poem with you. Thank you. He's a great kid. It's a telephone poem. And I don't know what, and I'm not trying to speak to the men on this one, but I know every mother in this room hates for her phone to ring at midnight. Because it's never any good news. It never will be. I wrote a poem for D'Angelo. When my phone trembles after midnight, I never think of good news, someone's birthday, and overseas friends forgetting the time difference. I never smell apples baking or nutmeg dancing over sweet potatoes, yeast rolls rising, fish frying. I always look for a way to hold myself together. Being a 60s person, I know you have to be strong. When the phone trembles after midnight, I take a deep breath, reach for my glasses, think of my son, and I pray. This is not a poem. This is hot chocolate at the beginning of spring, topped with hand-whipped double cream. A splash of brandy to give it sass, and just a little cinnamon to give it class. This is not a poem. This is a summer quilt, log cabin pattern. See the corner piece? That was grandmother's wedding dress. That was grandpapa's favorite Sunday tie. That white strip there is the baby who died. Mama had pneumonia, so the red flannel shows the healing. This does not hang from museum walls, nor will it sell for thousands. This is here to keep me warm. This is not a sonnet, though it will sing. Precious Lord, take my hand. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. Go down, Moses, way down to the past, way up to the future. It will swell on the voice of Marian Anderson, lilt on the ariat of Leontine, dance on the trilling of battle, do the dirty, dirty with Bessie, moan with Dinah Washington, rock and roll through the 60s, wrap its way into the 90s, and go on out into space with Etta James saying, at last. No, this is not a sonnet, but the truth of the beauty that the only authentic voice of planet Earth comes from the black soil, tilled and mined by the daughters of the diaspora. This is a rocking chair, rock me gently in the bosom of Abraham. This is a bus seat, no. I'm not going to move today. This is a porch where they sat spitting at the fireflies, telling young Alex the story of the African. This is a hook rug to cover a dirt floor. This is an iron pot with the leftover vegetables, making a slow cooking soup. This is pork sizzling, simmering chitlins, surprising everybody with our ability to make a way out of no way. This is not rest when we are weary, nor comfort when we are sad. It is laughter when we are in pain. It is never mind when we are confused. It is don't let nobody turn you round when our way is dark. It is the faith of our mothers who plaited our hair, put Vaseline on our faces, polished our rundown shoes, patched our dresses, wore sweaters so that we could wear coats, who welcomed us and our children when we were left alone to rear them, who said, get your education and nobody can put you back. This is not a poem, no. It is a celebration of the road we have traveled. It is a prayer for the roads yet to come. This is an explosion, the original Big Bang that makes the world a hopeful, loving place. This is the black woman and all our trouble and glory and all our past history and future forbearance and all that ever made love a possibility. This is about us. Bleached and natural, braided and straightened hair, made up or beaten up faces, tall, short, stately, bent, CC riders, junkies, whores, wives, mothers, grandmothers, aunts, working in the home or outside, working in the system or outside, working, praying, working to survive, giving pride, giving succor, giving voice, giving encouragement, giving whatever we can give. This is a flag that we placed over Peter Salem and Peter Poor, the 54th Regiment from Massachusetts, all the men and women lynched in the name of rape, Emmett Till, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr. This is a banner we fly for respect, dignity, the assumption of integrity, for a generation to rally around. This is about us celebrating ourselves, and a well-deserved honor it is. Light the candles. This is a rocket. Let's ride.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and you are listening to a speech by the great poet Nikki Giovanni, given May 10th at the 2017 Pan-African Studies Forum. We're going to take a short station break, and when we return, more from Nikki Giovanni. Welcome back to Sojourner Truth. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning, for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. And we would like to welcome our SoundCloud listeners. You can check us out on SoundCloud. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And you can check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And if you're a member of Facebook, please like and friend us on Facebook. And today, we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the state of Virginia. Also, on SoundCloud, you'll be able to listen to the Q&A of Nikki Giovanni that she gave after her speech at the 2017 Pan-African Studies Forum at Cal State University, Los Angeles. Now let's return to hear more from Nikki Giovanni.
I am a television freak, and I am, and I probably should get over it, but and I do teach at Virginia Tech. I teach Tuesday, Thursday, and one of the things is the kids know I do it, but now it's been several months. On Jeopardy, I couldn't believe it. Jeopardy has finally, by the way, I know that we're Pan-African majors here, but one of the things that you're doing, I hope, is that you're reading, because 90% of all of the questions on the game show network, they're literary. And so if you're reading and learning something, then when you get on Jeopardy or something, you'll be able to, you know. Well, we want you to win. And I know that Game Show Network is hiring more black people because they're getting more black questions, you know. Alice Walker was an answerer recently. Toni Morrison has been an answer a bunch of times. And this is sad. They finally ask the Image Awards. So I'm looking at Jeopardy, and it's the Image Awards. This is wonderful. Well, I have 7 Image Awards. And so I was calling my friend, hey, Image, I'm gonna be a question on Jeopardy. I don't know if you look at Jeopardy. You know, they went all the way through the Image Awards and didn't mention me. I was hurt, you know, one of those things. But I went, you know, because you are. But there's a show that I like. It's called Deal or No Deal. So I thought, okay, we're looking at Deal or No Deal. And you know what? I don't dislike white people. I'm gonna say it like that because I don't. But you know, they're greedy. Yeah. I was looking at Deal or No Deal. Have you, and they do the same thing on Wheel of Fortune. You know. Everything would be, there'd be one letter missing, and they'll want to do it just one more time. That's true, you've seen it. I pray, Jesus, let it be bankrupt. Oh, so bad. Don't you just love it? They don't get anything. And Deal or No Deal, they always taking Deal or No Deal as if this was somebody human, you know? And so I remember, and this is what I said in my class one day. It was a man. He had like $20,000. You know, I mean, ridiculous amount. Good day's work. And Howard says to him, you know, Deal or No Deal, you know, I'm going to beat the banker. But the fund is not a banker. It's a machine, and you're going to lose. And so you know that. If you're ever on Deal or No Deal, if I haven't done anything else for you this evening, you cannot beat the banker. And so, of course, he was like, I'm going to beat the banker. And, of course, you know, he got nothing. I just love it. I went into class on Tuesday, and I said to my class, you know, did you see, because now they're looking at it because they know I do, did you see Dylan? Oh, did you see that fool lost that $20,000? And so the class is like, yeah, they're smiling. I said, you know, I should be on Deal or No Deal. You know, don't you think? I mean, I think I'd be really, really good. I said, you know, we ought to, you know, let me get on Deal or No Deal. And you know how some of you teach, so you know how it's like all of a sudden it's quiet. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. I'm sitting here thinking, well, I grade you people. You got to do better. And I don't want you to think my feelings are easily hurt, but my feelings do get hurt. And it was just, I'm just looking at their faces and I said, y'all go. Just go away. You know, hell, they have made me upset. You know, the least they can do is lie, you know, something. So they were just like, oh, whatever, you know, maybe they've done. So they just said, go, get out of here. And one of my students, because we all have students that we talk to, one of my students, you know, he was hanging back. And he said, you know, Nick, you know, I just think you ought to know that the reason nobody wanted to say anything is, you know, we didn't want to see you make a fool of yourself. And I had a look at him. I said, do you really think, I said, this just, do you really think that the first time in my life that I have made a fool of myself will be on Deal or No Deal? I couldn't believe it. I don't know if I thought there was faith or what. I just like, you gotta be, get out, go. And I went upstairs and I wrote a poem. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, I just couldn't believe it. But I thought that they should have to answer for it. Deal or no deal? For English 4714. And I wanted them to know exactly who they are. CRN16937. I hope their grandchildren, you know, say, Grandmother, were you in that English class? Or they have to admit, they hurt my feelings. My class is not so sure that I should apply to deal or no deal. They think I am lucky, after all, I am teaching them. They know I'm smart, they are, for example, learning, yet they don't want to see me make those greedy mistakes and push beyond the envelope. The banker is neither friend nor foe, he's a machine. To think you can beat him is to think you will win at Vegas or love. But I persist. My dream is a red dress above my knees, high heel red sandals, and me coming over the top. The music booming, doom, 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 doom. Hi, Howie, I would say, with a lovely smile. I don't want to play the game, I want to be it. They were born 40 years after me, yet I am younger. I know you cannot go through life unless you are willing for love or money to make a fool of yourself. Where else does the ecstasy lie? I wanted to, and I should, as a creative writing teacher, I should remind all of us, we all have a story to tell. And I remind my students at the beginning of the year, the most important, or one of the most important stories, period, in literature, is Anne Frank. And it's important because Anne Frank didn't think she had a story to tell. She was just keeping a diary. She was just, this is what happened to me every day. And yet it's become one of the most important literatures that we have, because it says that every day, of course, Anne is gonna get killed. We know all of the sadness that's going to happen with those Nazis. We've got them there. But I wanted to, and I need to remind you, because so many of us, not that you need me to remind you, but so many of us have come from Mississippi or Alabama or Arkansas. We've come from someplace else. And we're thinking, I don't have anything to say. But you do have something to say. And in 40 or 50 years, what you have to say may be the most important thing that we know. So it's very important that you just sit down in the evening. My doctor won't. I had a medical problem, so my doctor didn't let me drink. I can drink champagne. I can't drink any red wine anymore. So in the evening, which is sad, but in the evening, it is. But in the evening, I can sit down with a glass of champagne. I drink a cheap champagne, so it's very nice. You know, you feel like you're doing something grown up. Just jot down some of what has happened. I'm a poet, so I write a lot of it. You can see what happens in the poetry and in the history in my poems. But I think it's so important because people think, I can't do this, and you've got to do this. And by the time you get to be my age especially, you'll have girlfriends. And that's incredibly important because you and your girlfriend, well, I'm sure that the guys do it too, but we'll have girlfriends and we sit and we need to talk about what we fixed, what we ate, what somebody made for us, what somebody showed us, what somebody said. It's important that we keep these memories, is what I'm trying to say. And if we do, you say, well, nobody will publish it. We're not interested in what somebody publishes. We're not, it's not our job what somebody else does. It's our job what we do. And it's very important that we do that. I just wanted to share that, just because I'm a fan. I remember my grandmother and them sitting on the porch, and I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, and sitting on the porch, Miss White lived next door, and Miss Abrams lived next door. And so, you know, you sit there and you heard the old ladies. I don't really know, what I remember from them doing that, I sincerely don't. But I remember the warmth. And so I remember the fact that these three ladies would holler back and forth. Of course, grandmother belonged to every club in the world because we're Southerners, and so she was a Delta, of course, but but she was a Baptist. We went to the Baptist church, so she worked in the church. We have to find the time to be able to share some of ourselves with each other. I just wanted to say that. And I'm going to close on a poem that I love a lot. It's called Hands. There's just something, I don't even know if I'm doing justice to it, but there's just something, like no matter what goes on. I remember when I had my son, I don't care, I do not understand. This is not that bad. You see people like they had babies and like baby having babies is fun. No, getting babies is fun. Having babies. That's the truth. We need to tell the young women that having babies hurt, and it does. And there's just something about, I don't know what they do now, because as I said, my son is 46. But I remember being, I was the first person in my family born in the hospital, and my son was born in the hospital. And I remember, you have these cramps, of course, and my sister said, I think you're having that baby. And it's like, oh no, it's not time, because you already know the times. And it said, no, you're having a baby. And I remember going to General Hospital, and I remember mommy just wiping, it's gonna be all right, it's gonna be all right. I remember her hands, is what I'm saying. And it's something wonderful about your mother. I was sorry my grandmother wasn't with me. It's just something wonderful about your mother just putting her hands on your head or just holding your hands. And it's not just about having the babies or anything, it's about just knowing that her hands are there. And of course, when your mother transitions, it's really nice just to be holding her hands and to feel that energy going on up to heaven and knowing that it's going to be all right. You're going to miss her, so you cry, but you don't cry because you're worried. You cry because you're going to miss her. It's a big difference. I think hands must be very important. Hands, plait hair, knead bread, spank bottoms, ring in anguish, shake the air in exasperation, wipe tears, sweat, and pain from faces, or at the end of arms which hold his hands. Let's start with the hands. My grandmother washed on Mondays every Monday. If you were a visiting grandchild or a resident daughter, every Monday morning at 6 a.m., mostly in the dark, frequently in the cold, certainly alone, you heard her on the back porch starting to hum, as black Christian women, ladies are prone to do, at threshold, some plea to higher beings for forgiveness and the power to forgive. I saw a photograph once of the mother of Emmett Till, a slight brown woman with pillbox hat, white gloves, eyes dark beyond pain, incomprehensibly looking at a world that never intended to see her son be a man. That same look is created each year without the hat and gloves for Mother Seal, without the hat and gloves, for Mother Seals are not chic at the Arctic Circle. That same look is in vogue in Atlanta, Cincinnati, Buffalo, for much the same reason. During one brief moment, from one passing wrinkle in time, Nancy Reagan wore that look, sharing a bond as yet unconsummated with Betty Shabazz, Jacqueline Kennedy, Coretta King, Ethel Kennedy. The wives and mothers are not so radically different. It is the hands of women which massage the balm, the ointments, the lotions into the bodies for burial. It is our hands which cover the eyes of small children, soothe the longing of the brothers, make the beds, set the tables, wipe away our own grief to give comfort to those beyond comfort. I yield from women whose hands are black and rough. The women who produce me are in defiance of porcelana and Jergens lotion, are ignorant of Madge's need to wash their fingernails in palm olive dishwashing liquid. My women looked at cracked, jagged fingernails that will never be adequately disguised by Revlon's new spring reds. We of the unacceptably strong take pride in the strength of our hands. Some people think a quilt is a blanket stretched across a Lincoln bed or from frames on a wall, a quaint museum piece to be purchased on Bloomingdale's 30-day savings cash plan. Quilts are our mosaics, Michelangelo's contribution to beauty. We weave a quilt with dry, rough hands. Quilts are the way our lives are lived. We survive on patches, scraps, the leftovers from a materially richer culture, the throwaway from those with emotional options. We do the far more difficult job of taking that which nobody wants and not only loving it, not only seeing its worth, but making it lovable and intrinsically worthwhile. Though trite, it's nonetheless true that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Perhaps pitiful would be more accurate, though that too is not profound. The more we experience the human drama, the more we are to understand that whatever is not quite well about us will also not quite go away. Sometimes, when it's something like Mother's Day, you really do wish you were smart enough to make the pain stop, to make the little hurts quit throbbing, to share with Star Trek Spock the ability to touch your fingertips to the temples and make all the dumb, ugly, sad things of this world ease from memories. It's not at all that we fail to forgive ourselves for the hurts we have met it. So we use our hands to push away rather than to pull closer. We look in vain for an image of mothers, for an analogy for families, for a reason to continue. We live mostly because we don't know any better, as best we can. Some of us are lucky. We learn to like ourselves, to forgive ourselves, to care about others. Some of us, on special occasions, watch the ladies in the purple velvet house slippers with the long black dresses come in from Sunday worship, and we realize man never stood up to catch and kill prey. Man never reared up on his hind legs to free his front parts to hold weapons. Woman stood to free her hands, to hold her young, to embrace her sons and lovers. Woman stood to applaud and cheer a delicate mate who needs her approval. Woman stood to wipe the tears and sweat, to touch the eyes and lips. That woman stood to free the arms which hold the hands which hold.
We're out of time. I'd like to again thank Dr. Melina Abdullah and the entire team over at Cal State University, the Pan-African Studies Department. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, assistant producer Stephanie Case, our intern Sherelle Withers, and our engineer Mr. T. Teddy Robinson. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
I wanna love you and treat you right. I wanna love you every day and every night. We'll be together with the roof right over our heads. We'll share the shelter of my
I love you.